Thank you for joining us and welcome to another edition of Answers Network. I'm your host, Alan Cardoza. For those of you that have been listening, sending in questions and comments, thank you so much. And please continue to help spread the word that every Monday from 11 a.m. to noon Pacific time, this show brings on special guests that can inspire, educate, and in some cases entertain, while bringing answers and options to making our lives happier, healthier, and more successful. Now, if you can't listen live, all of our shows can be found at answers.network. So if there's any subject that you're thinking about or there's answers that you're looking for, go to answers.network and you'll be able to find that. And I'd also appreciate it if you could forward one of our shows, and this would be a great one because this one affects everybody, and forward it to your social media group and to someone you know who can benefit from this subject or any other that we've done a show on. Now, this is just one powerful way that we can make a positive difference in influencing the world. Now, our question for today is, what if it was easy to end scarcity now and forever? Probably saying to yourself, that's a big question. And if the solution has nothing to do with politics or social issues, because right now that's what those that are putting out mainstream media would like you to think. Well, during these uncertain times, most of us are concerned with the growing instability. And as we are at the threshold of massive disruptions that we know are affecting all of us, well, with 30 years of professional financial market experience and over a decade of intense research, our guest, Kristen Ragusan, is uniquely positioned to shed light on this exact subject. Kristen is a professional wealth manager, consultant, having invested over $150 million. She helps clients navigate markets and achieve financial goals. She is a certified digital currency professional and earned her master's degree from the Fletcher School of Law and Diplomacy at Tufts University. And she's the author of the book we're going to be talking about, The End of Scarcity, The Dawn of the New Abundant World. And let me tell you, this well-researched page-turner reveals in layman's terms, meaning I could understand it, how the money we use creates scarcity and how to fix it. So Kristen holds certificates in, and this was an interesting one, it says FinTech or FinTech. So I'm assuming that's financial technology from Massachusetts Institute of Technology, and in money and society from the University of Cumbria in London. And I just love the idea. Nobody told me when I went to school that, well, you know, you can get a degree in money. I would have gone for that. On the personal side, she loves the adventure of life and everything it brings, from the many kinds of people to the wonders of nature. She has traveled throughout the world. Her many journeys include climbing Mount Kilimanjaro, hiking through the Sahara Desert, and studying at a spiritual school located in the foothills of southern India. Kristen, welcome to Answers Network.
Oh, thank you so much, Alan. It is such a pleasure to be here with you.
Well, as we were talking a little bit right before we came on the air, I feel that it's unfortunate that we're in the position we're in, but yet at the same time, this book is coming out at the perfect time in which we are going through some crazy things on so many fronts. It seemed to me that this was a book that was meant to be, and it was meant to come out right now. How did you come to that point, and after 10 years of research, decide this is the time?
Yeah, you know, I didn't even really decide. This is just the time it was first able to come out. So it shows you even how this, we really are on time. And humanity has been grappling with this issue for, as far as I can tell, for at least the last 5,000 years. And we are really the first civilization, the first generation who has the opportunity to solve it once and for all forever. So that's a big statement, but it's 100% true.
Now let's talk a little bit about the book, and your thoughts on an abundance model of money and wealth versus the scarcity model, because that's what you've based it on. And as you said, it seems as though we've had a scarcity model since the beginning of time. And also, can you talk a little bit about why people in power felt that it needed to stay that way?
Yeah. You know, I think it's sort of just the age old dilemma between wanting to survive, wanting to feel safe in a world that can be quite precarious, or certainly, you know, in previous times or in other places on the earth, very uncertain. So our sort of old school hierarchical structures have provided the best stability that was possible. And we are now definitely moving beyond that, where we can have much more flatline oriented bottom up systems, where people themselves can really choose what kind of a society, what kind of a life, and I think come back into concert with nature. You know, the rest of nature sort of working on this abundant principle. You know, one oak tree produces how many acorn produces how many oak trees. You know, when we look at the basis of what's always happening in nature, this is the same basis for humans too, but we're sort of stuck in the story of woe and forever on that hamster wheel of trying to earn enough, do enough, read enough, there's almost no time for living. And in this lack of living, we lose the plot. You know, we really get indoctrinated and lulled into this illusion of scarcity. We're truly living with an illusion of scarcity. And our models, our institutions have created that framework of that also keeps it in place. But as we can see today, certainly with this latest potential of credit crisis again, it's always underneath. When you misdesign the systems, what pops up out, you know, underneath like an iceberg here is always going on, even if it gets resolved in the short run. So
now in the introduction, I mentioned that you've had extensive travels to many, many wonderful places. Have you found anywhere in the world where they are doing something more close to what it is that you're talking about from the standpoint of an abundance model? That we can look at and see how it either works or isn't working.
We have many examples in history. You know, even what birthed the Magna Carta, what birthed really the precursor to the Constitution, was a properly created money system. So in 1250, the Magna Carta came, which was the result of doing money on the abundance model. And the Constitution, of course, came 500 years later, but was strongly written from that. Even kings started abdicating their powers. Parliament was created. The ideas of self-rule came from creating money correctly. Now, the really important concept, which is a big switch in mindset that's almost the most important, is that we have to understand that money itself is a mere tool or a mere technology that we created together to help us. And so why did we create money in society? Because each one of us is born with unique talents and gifts and interests and passions in this incredibly resourceful planet that we're living on. And so that actually is the wealth. And the desire to create one another, whether, you know, we feel compelled in our jobs if we're not inspired by them. But even if we weren't working, there still would be a desire to create something. And that actually is the basis of wealth. Everything that we create, everything that we're in love with, all of our passions, and the beauty, the fruits and gifts of this planet. So that's part of the human nature. That is wealth. And we decided, well, it might be easier to come up with a tool like the telephone to help us talk to one another, or the computer to find information or connect, or the car to help us with transportation. We decided to create money as a mere tool of technology to assist us. And the big question is whether the money that we're using is designed properly. Is it an effective technology or tool? And the short answer is no. In fact, the money that we're using today works against us. It actually works against wealth accumulation and stability. And that money has changed many, many, many times over history. In the United States alone, we've changed almost the form of money that we're using 8 times. And in terms of the small changes and big changes, that have happened to it. So I like to say when we enter this idea of the abundance model, which is absolutely happening at all times, right? So it's just here next to us. It requires a small shift of perspective to see it or even have enough courage to say, maybe it's possible. Enough courage to feel curious enough to be like, could this possibly be true? And here it is waiting for us to find it. And then we start to look at, my goodness, we the people who create all the products and resources in this world and communities, which are the basis of life, we also create the money. So we easily can begin to change this system and just put it back into the right perspective so it begins to work for us.
You know, it makes me think of like a barter system. And about 10, 12 years ago, I worked a case returning a parentally abducted child. And the person who took the child joined a group I think that would be thought of by many as like a cult, but they joined this group. And one of the ways in which we were able to find them was to infiltrate this group. And so we went undercover, we joined them. Many of them lived in the forest, but everything was a barter system. So money had no value as we would see money. So in other words, we couldn't go in there and pull out money. We had to learn enough about the way that they existed, or they would have known we don't fit, you know, that we're not one of them or we can't be part of them. So we had to know what the values were of the different things that they bartered, which was in most cases food. Now in this, it was food. There was also cigarettes, alcohol, and marijuana that was bartering, that you could barter with. But with what you're talking about, I mean, is this more of like a bartering system where we're bartering what our gifts are or our talents?
You know, it's so funny. Everyone asks me that. And even I started talking about this stuff in 2007 and 2008. I still have compassion for all the people who have lived near me because they've had to hear about this so much, even though it's wildly exciting because it's the core of our lives. I would say that today, even though we're unaware, we're bartering all the time. It's just been monetized. Yeah. So for an example, if I go to Starbucks or the coffee store or whatever, and I get, you know, a cup of coffee, in essence, I'm questioning, is the price of the coffee worth what I contribute in terms of consulting services or other types of services like this as an exchange? Mm-hmm. And money itself is acting as the equal sign in the 3 + 4 = 7. It gives me an opportunity to have a standard of measure for the exchange. For the person who gave me the coffee, they get the receipt that they contributed to me. And then also it gets to store, it becomes a store of value where it should be ready or liquid anytime the other person wants to exchange it for goods and services, right? So money in essence is the monetization of barter. It's really important though to understand that we are truly bartering all the time, because this drives home that there are two sides of the equation always. And in our world, we're already programmed unconsciously that those who have the money have more power than those that have the products and services. When in fact, money is just in the middle, because there is no seller without a buyer. There is no buyer without the seller. We totally need each other. There is no life with one another. And so money itself was only supposed to have value from the products and services that we create. Now, when we pause for a moment and feel that, what happens is humanity becomes right away in the driver's seat, because our wealth creation, our gifts and our services, our expressions, our contributions, which actually create the value that even gives money the opportunity to exist. But we've been so turned around where money has been created scarce on purpose for that system of control, good or bad, right? Just sort of a lower level of consciousness, that it actually makes people have to run around to get the money first before they can become themselves or dream about how they want to contribute, or even just become a naysayer to, wow, I have this beautiful idea life would never let it happen. When in fact, when you have a beautiful idea, it's because life wants it to happen. Yeah.
Now, I know that you've proposed a system. It's a system of corporate credits. It replaces the current fiat currency system at a large scale. How does that compare with the Chinese social credit system that is proving to be more of a control mechanism by their government rather than something that benefits the people?
Absolutely. You know, it's in stark contrast, although I really do believe that most of our, if not all of our energy, I mean, we have to become very wise and shrewd and not naive. We have to really look about what's around us and still say, okay, there are these other systems. I believe strongly that our energy should not be in fighting against the system that is, because it's still, we're all still part of the system to a large degree. Right. You know, I say to people, when you want your stock values to go higher and you want your prices to go lower, we're still part of the same system that we're saying is working against us, right? It's just a small fractal and a bigger fractal. So, you know, when we look at this, and I still think it's sort of important, maybe we can backtrack after and just look at how money comes into the real economy, because this is the gateway to freedom, because it is different than we believe it is. But the Chinese style system, which may be the prototype of what's soon going to be introduced, will it be 6 months, 18 months in all countries, whether it be the United States, Russia, Europe, you know, China continued, is the central bank digital currencies, or what are known as the CBDCs. And the idea is that everyone would have a bank account with the Federal Reserve, because you wouldn't be able to trust the banking system as it is. Now, this sort of prototype and organization has been going on for a long time prior to banking, runs right on banks or any of these kinds of things. So the problem with that is that you have no choice. Capitalism, the basis of choice and competition of capitalism, absolutely goes away. And furthermore, there's no opportunity for investment capitalism to come back into place, which maybe has been vastly eroded since the 80s, where in the 50s and the 70s, a loan was created for a business, and that business was supposed to contribute, you know, small businesses creating 70% of the jobs. In earlier times, a business had to get a charter showing that they were working for the good of the people to even legally become a business. Mm-hmm. So the basis of real investment capitalism, which maybe many people criticize capitalism, but we really don't have it anymore, is in fact that credit can be issued to a business who's going to produce something and hire more people and enrich society. So a central bank digital currency, or a Chinese style social credit system, would really be the end of most banks. And it's quite curious to even see how the banking industry would allow this. And so maybe what we're seeing this week could be that squeeze and that capitulation of just making people afraid enough that they pull out and the whole thing implodes. But if in fact we were only to have a handful of banks, or to have the central bank itself with all non-elected people running it. So again, who owns the Federal Reserve? Is it federal? No. Is it partly not federal? No, not really. It really is owned by a few shareholders who are the big banks that it supposedly regulates. Right. So the problem with that is there's no democracy, there's no constitution, there's no republic, whatever we want to talk about as representing freedom. It really is a small handful of technocrats deciding whether businesses get funding or not, and more importantly, whether we get to access our own money. So it's really draconian. It's almost inconceivable, but I think in a post-corona world, almost anything is conceivable. And so very much so, awakening to the idea that people who create the labor, or businesses who create the labor, were the ones meant to issue the currency is an age-old idea, and one that must rapidly come back into the common understanding. And so the founding fathers, truly, all the colonists left England because they were heavily in debt and the money was scarce gold coins. So they came here and they issued paper money, but yes, not as we were told or heard about in folklore or as we were learning American history. It was actually issued to represent farming and land banks. So it represented the productivity of the people. And it created such stability and thriving for the colonists that the British wrote, "This mischief of the colonists must be stopped." And in fact, it was the basis of the Revolutionary War, that creating money to represent the wealth of the people has been the battle of the freedom of all people everywhere throughout humanity. And here we are again.
So how, first of all, how do we stop what it appears that they're trying to do? Mm-hmm. And how do we get the shift to what it is that you're talking about, where it is focused more on what our true wealth is? And it does seem like, there are people in power now that is their goal, to take away our freedom, and that they know better and the rest of us are just too dumb to know what we're supposed to do. And it drives me crazy that not everybody sees that.
Right.
So how, what can the people do? I mean, so one is that, first of all, I think everybody should buy the book and educate yourself. In fact, another thing we were talking about right before we went on the air is someone who I was talking to who was upset that they've taken civics out of the school system. And it started back in the late 80s, and that they've slowly removed civics to a point in which people that didn't really notice that it was gone. They just took it away. So, which also made it to where if you don't understand civics and you haven't been educated in it, then you don't understand government and you're not educated in it. So you just go about your business and you don't really make much of a fuss about things because you don't really understand it. I'm concerned that this is a similar situation, that they've been chipping away at it and chipping away at it. And that before we know it, we're going to have a situation that we're losing a huge amount of our freedom. So again, other than reading the book and educating themselves, what are some things that people can start doing so that this doesn't happen?
Yeah, definitely coming together in community is going to be one of the most important things. And some people have said to me, my goodness, what time is there? But to connect with a neighbor, to reach out and really find out who your farmers are that live around you. That's the primary thing. The book has the information that we should have gotten in the first grade that I think really, you know, my father was born in 1934 and they had this education, you know. Mm-hmm. Absolutely been worked out of the textbooks. This is why this took me 10 years to research, is because it's the information I can't even tell you what I would have paid for to have in the most simple fashion. So we need to begin to educate each other. But here's the really great news. First, it is sort of saying, really, you know, getting over the hump that this is hard to believe. We've been sort of in a very privileged position in the sense of naivete, you know, that we in the past maybe 50 years in America have been able to enjoy a relative amount of peace in our own country, in the sense that bombs have not been dropping on our heads. And we've been able to think about how are we going to make our lives or make our communities or our families. And so we have not thought about or lived the struggles that all those before us have. So first of all, in terms of losing that naivete and saying, okay, this is actually truly not even new. This is what has the same story re-echoing for 5,000 years. And if you don't really recognize how precious your freedom is, it's always taken away. But in terms also, on the other hand, people are so powerful. This is sort of the real, there's nothing cliche about it. We are so vastly powerful that when we just start coming together in small groups, you know, if one were to say, oh, poke the bear a little bit, mm-hmm. It's sort of in this very central, graceful type of awakening that the powers that be are doing the best that they can with their very weak imagination and small numbers. So I really even say bless and forgive them, you know, in trying to sort of keep this structure together and the structure that, you know, the shoe no longer fits, or like the little chick that's outgrowing the egg, we're ready to peck this system down, but it becomes really scary when we can't imagine the new system that's waiting for us. So the first thing is that when we start to recognize that, wait a minute, money only has value if we are producing things. If we're not producing things, what's the point of having money? You know, why we wouldn't even be able to buy something. And apparently these CBDCs will have an expiration date on them. So, you know, people will have to use their money or lose it. And then, of course, it will be not anonymous. So it'll be total censorship of where people can go for information. Now, when we start to wake up and say, wait a second, who are the most valuable participants in societies? I think farmers pretty much, you know, rank mm-hmm. in the top three. And we can all of a sudden go to our farmers and say, huh, maybe you should be issuing the alternative currency. And this is what the founding fathers did. So that colonial script came out as representing land banks. So farmers today issue farm shares or CSAs, meaning that in the winter, I can give $400 or $500 to a farmer. And then in the summer, I can come for 10 or 15 weeks and get a box of fresh, beautiful produce because I basically invested in the farm without interest. You know, there's no intermediary. And the farmer now, I've got the promise. So could that promise for that basket of food turn into an alternative currency? And the question is, yes, easily, mm-hmm. but would someone else accept it for payment? And that's how all money gets its value, is when someone accepts it for payment. Now, I believe what we're going to do is in our communities, we're going to start issuing labor-backed dollars. And any intentional community that comes together can do this. The easiest way to do it is to start coming together with a few people, with your farmers, asking a few stores, would they accept the farmer's credit as an alternative currency? And this even can be done with paper at the beginning. It will quickly be put on the blockchain to show that it's not been counterfeited, that mm-hmm. it's actually truly worth a certain amount of promise to deliver of food, and that the right quantity is in circulation with supply and demand. I have the prototype in the book for everyone to use. Mm-hmm. And I'm creating communities so that people can learn from one another. And then we'll see builders issuing this and maybe wellness centers or educational centers. And I do think we will come to the area where corporations will start doing this. But first and foremost, communities must do this. And this is the basis of freedom.
Now, is there a cryptocurrency that is a farm-related cryptocurrency right now?
We have the inklings. So there's little things beginning to pop up. Cryptocurrency, you know, the whole blockchain revolution or the crypto revolution was still sort of speculation and exploitation 2.0 to begin with, right? So in Argentina, there is a crypto that represents soybean production. Mm. And so I think that's very encouraging. It's still single commodity. So the problem with single commodity money is it can be made more scarce than it is. So just like gold, we could say gold should be 5,000 an ounce. Gold should be much higher. Is it manipulated downward? In my personal opinion, yes. But still, to see already this soybean backed, because you want to have multiple issuers. In California, there's an amazing entrepreneur who's also a philanthropist, and the company does cyber security services. They also are preparing to issue money backed by a particular amount of their services. So this puts you run a big stake right through the moat wall. And because even if these CBDCs come, okay, all right. But as long as we have choice on the side, then it slowly becomes irrelevant.
Oh, the book is called The End of Scarcity, The Dawn of the New Abundant World. We're going to take a break right now. Stay with us because we're going to go much deeper into this. We'll be right back. You're listening to or watching Answers Network.
Founded over 30 years ago to meet the needs of families in crisis, West Shield has continually focused on resolving issues that negatively impact families and businesses. Our signature therapeutic transportation service helps to ensure that adolescents in crisis are safely transported to specialized schools, programs, and treatment centers with unsurpassed experience and success. We are supported by our full-service licensed investigation agency that has legally, professionally, and compassionately located hundreds of runaways and teens. We are experienced and qualified to help, offering solutions which may include referrals to our international network of top professionals in the fields of educational consulting, psychology, psychiatry, and investigations. Simply put, West Shield Adolescent Services and West Shield Investigations are the best solutions when your family is facing a personal crisis. Call 1-800-899-8585, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. That's 1-800-899-8585, or visit our website at westshield.com. Thank you.
All right, we're back. We're speaking with Kristen Ragusan, and we are talking about the end of scarcity, the dawn of the new abundant world. When we took a break, we were talking a little bit about cryptocurrency. So what about things like, I think it's XRP that is looking to replace the SWIFT system. And there seems to be, it's interesting that then our government got involved and decided to file a lawsuit against them because apparently they were trying to replace something they didn't want replaced or whatever, you know. What is that our government stopping us from doing this?
What do you see
that as?
It's probably vying for control at the top of the pyramid type of a thing. When you look at that, I still say the great money revolution is yet to happen. The great money revolution is us. Mm-hmm. And so even when you look at crypto, whether XRP, which is not limited, or even Ether or Ethereum, it's not limited. But Ethereum is more of funding for different types of projects. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it has more of a viability in terms of a decentralized finance tool. And when you look at things like XRP, are they still controlled by the technocrats? I think yes. I don't really think that's the pathway for the solution at all of what is waiting for us to discover it. Bitcoin, likewise. And I tend to be a Bitcoin fan. It doesn't mean that it won't be, taken out of circulation or made illegal or any of these kinds of things. But, you know, what I found, I read the Bitcoin white paper in 2009 when it first came out, and I was so deep in this research that I was like, no, you know, I think it's a great idea. The blockchain is super, but no, it is not money. And it is not money because it has to be scarce to have value. And you see, this has been the age-old pathway of control, whether it's been gold or Bitcoin or anything else that was small enough in quantity that I could have it or I could corner the market and then tell you that you had to wear a purple and red striped sweater and stand on your head for 5 minutes every Tuesday before you could have access to the money, right? So we are taught in our economics textbooks, or we're taught in folklore just growing up, money has to be scarce to have value. This is the number one non-truth. Now, because the mind says, wait a minute, does that mean it has to be unlimited? No, it has to be fluctuating because money is a mere technology representing the wealth we produce. So if we're producing more wealth, if we have more expansion, there should be more money in circulation. If we have less, if it's a period of ebb and flow, and now it's ebbing, there should be less. Money is actually not that important when it's created properly, because it just becomes the equal sign. And what's really important is what people are creating and what people want to be created. So the problem when you look at Bitcoin is that even if we go into this next phase, the government doesn't have to, or let's say the powers that be want to get rid of it, it can go up in value hypothetically. But when people start to use it as money, those with much more money can easily just be on the other end of the trade and shelve it, and it never circulates again. So these are not the pathways of solution. And I actually think it's great because we're supposed to wake up to the true fact that the power is in us, and that really money is just supposed to be these production-backed, producer-backed credits representing our products and services with one another.
Well, I love it. And I love the fact that you think big. We have some questions and comments that have come in. And again, I want to thank those that take the time. Oftentimes it's teachers or people that are working in the middle of the day. So they'll either sometimes send the questions in ahead of time or just instant message them to us. But again, we appreciate them all the time when you send them in. This one reads, my observations are that the world is being manipulated by a few powerful people and organizations such as the World Health Organization and the World Economic Forum, who openly state that you will own nothing and be happy. Please share your thoughts on this, as I would like to know how you envision prosperity for all. Wasn't this the great promise of Nazism and communism that resulted in totalitarian states in every one of the countries they successfully gained control of? I see it happening right here in the United States. I, or one, would never embrace a system of government that is centralized, dictatorial, and that requires complete subservience. And this is from Tony in New York.
Yeah. I mean, Tony's completely right. This is the system. This is the same story we've seen over and over. And, you know, the beauty is that as the people maintain the power, then the government works for the people. So this is why the solution is not political or social and not even traditional economic. Those are the distractions. And a lot of that can make us feel quite disempowered because we see tremendous corruption or we see bizarre agendas, even as we saw with the Credit Suisse bailout over the weekend. Mm-hmm. Where they let the bondholders, who are technically have a safer first in line, they let them all go bankrupt, and the stockholders who have more risk, they kept them solvent. So, you know, I don't understand how that creates more trust in the system. To me, it points to there are other things going on here. I have to say, though, all of this, once we're sort of well rested enough and feeling a tiny bit more cheerful, is good news. Because it shows that the power begins with us. And as we find the pathway for monetary freedom, there can be no freedom without monetary freedom. So we're sort of being whittled into the idea that, oh, a universal basic income is needed. Oh, the great robot revolution is coming. Again, I think these are backdoor dependencies, getting us to believe that we have to find a solution when the solution is just waiting for us right here. So as we come home to this idea of producer-backed currencies, the whole world changes, even the movement toward community banks. Community banks can be sustained with these producer credits. But I think it's really important to just even look at how the dollar is created, in the sense of how does the dollar come into our real economy? Many people think, oh, the Fed creates our dollars. Maybe a few people still think the dollar is backed by gold. But most people think, oh, the Federal Reserve creates the dollars. But this is absolutely not true. So when the Fed creates money, they create high-powered money, or what are called reserves. And that sits on the balance sheets of banks. And that goes in between banks. Those reserves never leave the banking system. So what are the dollars that we use, whether we see them in our hand or we have them in our account? That's actually technically bank credit. And don't worry, this is not super clunky. It just means that we're using other people's mortgages as our money. And so when you stop and you think about that, you'd say, wait a second, I'm looking at my checking account. I see dollars in there. And I would say to you, guess what? The truth is you're really looking at the tail side or the head side of someone's mortgage. So, And this is the really, and this is the linchpin. There is no thing in our world today other than the 3% of cash that's circulating that's actually non-debt that exists. All the rest of the money, which is 97% of the money that's in circulation, is debt. It's not created as debt. It doesn't come from government debt. It comes from people borrowing primarily consumer debt. So here's the thing. If you think of the hamster on the wheel running, 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 this is humanity having to consume, get a job, borrow, repay, borrow, repay. And this is what created 2008. It was not that banks created poor quality loans. It's that the borrower couldn't run fast enough to borrow, repay, that finally people ran out of steam and the whole thing implodes. And the same thing that we're seeing today, even if banks get bailed out, because 100% or 97% to be correct, of our money supply is only created through that lending process. Right. So if these banks stop lending, it creates a bank crisis, whether the Fed bails people out or not. And the other really important thing to understand about this is that if it were bad enough that we sort of go into this overconsumption, life starving process just to create a token of exchange that we're using, when the loans are repaid, so when if somebody takes a loan out for $10,000 or $100,000, when the principal value is repaid, the money is also destroyed. So every time someone repays a loan, because the loan is really someone's debt, it's really someone's mortgage, the debt is gone, but also the money is gone.
Okay.
And so this is very different. I think most people believe, okay, banks are intermediaries. They lend out someone else's money. 100% not true. Or banks create money from having 10% in reserves. Again, 100% not true. There's zero money in reserves. There's no reserve requirement in banks today. And this wouldn't necessarily be a problem, for as scary as it sounds, if banks were creating loans to businesses, but the vast amount of loans are created for mortgages and college. And guess what that does? That destroys the American dream, because it makes housing go up exponentially, college go up exponentially, and salaries drop. So the only way to break out of this is that the dollar itself must come into circulation, not as a debt, but as a credit to the promise to produce something. And that's how it's always been done during golden ages or thriving times.
Wow. So again, everybody, if you want to know more about this, get the book. We've got about 6 minutes left. We've got another question that came in. This one reads, I have studied the evolution of our financial system and just purchased your book to see how it compares to my own feelings on the topics, money, as well as scarcity and prosperity. I personally follow Catherine Austin Fitz and her philosophy of bringing everything back in support of one's local community, with a focus on local community banks, small business development, regional farming, etc. Can you comment on this? And are you familiar with Catherine's work? And do you agree? This is from June in North Carolina.
Hi, June. I do. Absolutely. Yeah, I've met Catherine before at conferences, and she has now recently, I think, just started recommending this solution also with other people. And I think there was some fear around the blockchain, which many people have. But again, we have to understand that any tool that exists in society can be used for good or bad. So just like the internet can be used for good or bad, the blockchain is simply a book, an accounting book, right? And that anybody can access and see where value was transferred. And then the beauty is that we get to prove that things are done correctly. So this really becomes, I think, the solution primarily for farmers. I'm hoping to be able to support farmers everywhere and even build these systems, be part of building these systems for them and to give them to farmers. That's really one of my major goals with this book as well. I do think that we will also see corporations, whether it's hypothetically Amazon or Apple, starting to issue Amazon and Apple dollars, totally hypothetical at this point. But and then some people have said to me, oh, you know, that'll make things worse. No, in fact, it will make it better, because credit will be existing in our society, not as debt, but as a promise to deliver. So it gets rid of these horrible dynamics that we're living in that destroy the American dream and end class mobility and destroy the middle class and all the rest of it. But on top of it, it would be limited by supply and demand. It would be clearly shown on the blockchain. And then the profits that these big companies would make, they would actually be spending them to keep their dollar at par. All of this is described in the book. But as soon as we, as the people, do this in our local communities, that's when we absolutely maintain the power that humanity was meant to have.
Wow, I love it. Thought popped into my mind. Have you spoken to Kimball Musk?
No.
The thought comes to mind as you were saying that is a great place to go, or next step would be to go to Kimball Musk and to Dr. Mark Hyman and start with renewable farms that are not taking away from the environment. And if we started in that area, you would bring a huge amount of people that, because it helps with another problem, you know, and you know that the problems that we're having with our food supply. I just think that if you had someone like that, and obviously somebody like Kimball Musk, who's also involved in that area, and Dr. Mark Hyman, two people with, I think, a lot of backing and a lot of power, that might be a great way to go.
Oh, that's so exciting. Yes. So,
yeah. If I could make it happen, I would, but don't know them personally, but follow them and love what they're doing in the sense that they're also wanting to make a positive difference in the world. And I think that's what we're all trying to do.
And this really, you know, I think then from this, you can build community banks and even go to state banks. But community banks would be first because they absolutely are more beholden and create most of the lending to the local people. The problem that we have with the state banking model without this is that you still can have the same corruption, take the power of the assets of the state to produce money to fund anything. So like we're seeing with universal basic income, which I think, again, is a backdoor way for enslavement packaged up in a beautiful thing, saying, OK, everybody should get $1,500 a month. In California, I think in Oakland, I'm not sure, but definitely Palm Springs, they were creating universal basic incomes, but only for some people. For, you know, and this mm-hmm. is the opposite of the basis of financial freedom should be for anybody who wants to be yeah. able to contribute, you know. And so without starting correctly with the unit of exchange, the other solutions can actually accelerate control and distortion on steroids. And, you know, I spoke at a crypto conference maybe 4 or 5 years ago, and I ran into a hedge fund guy who was out there supporting this idea of universal basic income. And I said, how on earth does that help people? If you gave everybody $1,500 or $3,000 a month, wouldn't that just create inflation and inflate all the prices of rent? And then those people who had capital on the side, wouldn't they be paid because the investment risk would be gone to just buy up all the rental property? Housing prices would double or quadruple, and you would have an even steeper oligarchy. And he said, well, if you have any money, you better be rooting for this so that crumbs can go out to the people. You know, and so this is where you have to, again, the less naive, you know, we have to still look at things and say, wait a minute. Maybe this really is, we're just being propelled to say a whole beautiful solution is waiting for us. And I think the more that we can encourage one another, that not only is this our time, not only is life rooting for us and are we wired for this, we're really wired for altruism. That's what real scientific studies show. But that these squeezes and these moments of fear are just getting us out of our comfort zone. And when we come together, this is where the magic can happen. And then now, of course, like with the end of scarcity and other wonderful things out there, the truth is coming back. And we are also having greater access to the blockchain. Even local people are sending satellites up into space so that no one can mm-hmm. turn off private blockchains. It is amazing how much is in our favor, no matter how scary it may continue to look in the short run.
Kristen, thank you so much. And not just for coming on the show, but for writing this book and for bringing this great energy. Again, I look forward to talking to you off the air as well, because if there's anything I can do to help, I would love to. Again, for everybody out there, the book is The End of Scarcity, The Dawn of the New World. And it is here just in the nick of time. So, Kristen, thank you so much. If there's any update, if there's another book in the works, keep me posted, because I would love to have you back on. I wish we had another couple of hours easily to go into this more.
Thank you so much. Such a pleasure.
All right. And for everybody out there, be with us next week when we're joined by Amanda Craig as she discusses her new book, Who Are You? And I'd really like you to please visit our archives of past interviews at answers.network, or just subscribe to the show through Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, SoundCloud, YouTube, Rumble, Spreaker, and so many more. This is what our job is. We are here to bring you positive things that helps make this world a better place. So please pass it on. And the next time you're on Instagram, Facebook, or Twitter, stop by our page, check out some of our latest posts, or share something with us that may help us and something we can pass on to other people as well. And just know that if you like them, please like us and spread the word. For everybody out there, be good human beings and be with us again next week on Answers Network.
You're listening to Answers Network with Alan Cardoza, only on LA Talk Radio.